Quick shout out to our sponsor, Hans Kombucha. Hannah and Kate of Hans Kombucha are the premier kombucha brewers here in Utah. If you are ever in the mood for some booch, Hans Kombucha is the place to go. Enjoy their favorite flavors like ginger hibiscus, chai pear, pineapple cactus nectar, and many more. Also, keep your eyes out for their seasonal rotations. You can order at their online store today at hanskombucha.com. That's HANSKOMBUCHA.com. We promise this is a booch you'll fall in love with. Until the next kombucha, my friend. Listening to the Taste Masters, where we delve into the world of craft beer, liquor, and other beverages. My friends, super fun episode today. I have one of my dear friends co-hosting, Mr. Chad Hopkins. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hi, David.
Man, your flow is flowing today.
Thank you.
I feel like it's always flowing.
Kinda.
Man, I'm envious. If I had straight hair, I wish my hair was like yours.
I wish mine was more curly.
Let's just trade one day.
Right.
I think we
I'll
should. And then you can do the facial hair. I can't. Mine's like advanced peach fuzz, and it just irritates me.
At least you have the curls.
That's okay. I'm okay with that. But I have a cool guest for you. One of our friends from Heber Valley Brewing, Clint. Mr. Clint Jones, how you doing, brother?
I am doing well.
You're all the way in Salt Lake in Hopkins.
I know,
from Heber,
crazy.
Dude. Thanks for being this side of the world.
Yeah, mountains are scary.
But
we made it down.
Luckily, you're on this way because you're hanging out with our friend James, yeah?
Yep. Yeah, we've almost all of our base pale and pilsner we try to get from James. So.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, nice. Our man, Solstice Malt.
Solstice Malt. Yes,
yeah.
Sir.
He's a good guy. Man, how's he doing, by the way?
Good. I walked in and he's milling grain. I think for you guys.
Oh, nice.
And using his big crazy shaker contraption to separate.
I think the pioneers brought that over when they came and settled Utah.
Yeah,
isn't that what
cool
the story
see.
Is?
I've seen it a bunch of times. Seen it a bunch of times, but it was cool to see it actually
in action
working. Yeah,
that's really cool. I've never seen it in action. I've seen it multiple times, but never in action.
Wow.
I need
to.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good.
It was awesome, and I had
plethora
of malts, and his purple malt blew me away.
Right.
And I don't like peat, but his peat was awesome. Anyway, so Clint, let's get down to the bottom of it. I want to know, who are you, dude? Where do you come from? What do you do? Bring us to...
Who am I?
Yeah.
I actually am from Colorado originally, Steamboat Springs.
Nice.
And I grew up at, like, literally until I opened this brewery with my friend and kind of older colleague, Greg Poirier. We were both in ski jumping for our whole lives. So,
damn.
I started coming over to Utah in the mid 90s when they got the first ski jumps built up in Park City. And then when they built the jumps for the Olympics in 2002, this became our home base. And so me and a couple of my friends, other ski jumpers, moved over here. And then I was on the national team for 7 years. Competed in the Olympics in Salt Lake.
No way.
And in Torino, and then coached the next few years after that, and drank a lot of beer along the way.
Hell yeah.
Beer and skiing, I think, go together really well. And then especially when I transitioned into the coaching side, then it's a lot more, you know, it's hard work, but you spend a ton of time on the road traveling all kinds of really cool places, and then you end up drinking and having good beers afterwards after the work is done. And so I think for me, beer has always been like a little underlying thing, but spending a ton of time in Germany and Japan and all over Europe and Czech Republic, and you know, getting to see those cultures kind of firsthand was a pretty big influence. And then actually I ended up marrying a Belgian.
Hey!
And so I spent quite a bit of time over there as well.
And what was your name again?
Jana.
Jana, so shout out Jana.
Nice. She was born and raised in Leuven, which is where the Stella Artois brewery is. So just down the street from there.
No big deal. So she has a good palate.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool to have that influence and connection. But anyway,
do you still ski? Do you still jump?
I don't jump very. So I was the national team head coach for from 2011 until 2017-18, and then was the team director for a couple of years. And then Greg, he was actually Nordic Combined, that's where you do ski jumping and then cross country.
Wow.
He was one of the coaches when I don't know if you guys would recognize it, but the U.S. team in Vancouver in 2010, Bill DeMong won the Olympics. The team, I think, got silver medal. Johnny Spillane, who's one of my brother's best friends, grew up in Steamboat Springs as well. He won 3 silver medals over there.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And at that Olympics, I met my wife there. She finished school in Belgium and was over there as a ski instructor. And then we kind of stayed in touch after that. And when I was in Europe, instead of coming back home in between competitions, I would just meet up with her wherever. And
that's really cool. How are your knees holding up, dude?
Knees are fine, you know.
I feel like your knees and hips are just smashed right
now. I got super lucky. I didn't ever have any like really bad injuries with ski jumping.
So are you secretly an adrenaline junkie right now?
Not really. I wouldn't say so. I mean, those kind of sports, like you start them at a young enough age that we definitely like to, go fast and fly through the air and all that kind of stuff.
Man.
But if you're like super nervous and like really get your adrenaline going during that activity, then you're not doing it right, I guess.
Gotcha. So that's fascinating. The exhilaration is running through. Man, I can only imagine. My wife could do that. I couldn't.
That's what I'm saying. Beer and skiing go hand in hand.
Yeah, that was the long story of that idea. I lived in Park City for a while, moved down to Heber in 2015 after my wife and I got married. And Greg and I both were like, you know, Heber is really missing this thing. I've been homebrewing for... I guess now it's coming up on 15-ish years.
Damn.
Really, I mean, probably earlier than I was legally able to drink.
It's all good. Who knows?
But anyway, making beer forever and then taking it more and more seriously the last 4 or 5 years at home, and then kind of had that idea. I've got a really good friend. His name's Chris Coyle. He has a brewery down in New Smyrna Beach in Florida. And we have another mutual friend up here that he grew up with. And every time that we were together, he kept pushing to, you know, like, hey, Heber needs a brewery. You need to you know, go for it. And Greg kind of said, you know, we were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we opened a brewery here? Because Heber was really, really missing it. So finally we just decided that if we weren't going to do it, then somebody else would.
It'll beat you to
we'd
it.
We'd be kicking ourselves. So
absolutely,
so we did it. And
yeah. I'm glad he did. Yeah, here we are. So when did you open Heber Valley?
August 24, 2019. So it's been just over 2 years.
Gotcha. So how did the, we all got affected by the pandemic, but you guys opened right before a world shutdown. And then does that make just life a little bit hard?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, it hasn't been nearly as bad as we were expecting. I remember specifically, like, we'd been open just long enough to kind of get some traction, get some regular customers, and I remember specifically, you know, it was like the week that the news was coming out that there was this pandemic, and we had like a couple weeks in a row that were just really good, really consistent. And I was talking to Greg's wife, Shannon, in the back. And I'm like, hey, look, this whole thing's actually going to work out. And she said, yeah, as long as this COVID thing doesn't shut the world down. And I was like,
get out of here.
Like, stop being so negative. Like, we're all. And then like 10 days later, it was us trying to figure out how we were going to sell beer out, out of the front door.
So, how did you, because you guys are pretty small. What's your system look like right now?
It's a 3.5 barrel system from Blickman. Me and Greg, my friend Chris in Florida, and then another good friend that I grew up ski jumping with, Adam Schwall. Those two are kind of, you know, helped us get up and running, but Greg and I are the primary partners. But, you know, we didn't have a ton of money, and doing all of this like small batch stuff direct to customers was how we were going to make it work. And so once we switched to, like, we don't have a canning line. We actually have one that should be showing up hopefully, in the next 3 weeks.
Nice.
But since then we had to figure out how we were going to put beer in cans and do it at least at a high enough quality level that we could feel kind of comfortable with it.
Sure.
Which has been,
So when that pandemic happened, how did you guys stay afloat? By bottling and canning?
Yep. Yeah. The spot we're in is, I think it was originally like a Hoagie Yogi's, and then it turned into a coffee shop. And it's got a drive-through window. And we were thinking, like, oh, this is a perfect solution. And we, like, maybe the DABC will give us a temporary approval. But we called and asked if we could sell beer out the window. And they said no immediately.
Of course not.
So we, just kind of moved everything. We had a little table set up in the front and immediately just started canning all of our beers one at a time with a little October seamer.
Oh, you poor man.
And originally we tried some like Blickman beer gun and a couple different things. And what we ended up using is just we have a CO2 line that splits so we can purge a can before we're filling. And then we fill off of either. It actually works better with like a jockey box because you can get, we can get the beer way colder and keep the foam down. And then we have a secondary CO2 line filling next to the actual tap head. Mm. So it's still purging while you're filling in the can.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And that's kind of what
it came up on your own?
Doing.
That's good.
That,
yeah.
That is cool.
Nice.
So what was one of the first beers you guys released ever?
The first
Heber Valley Brewing.
At that point, when we first, that was another hurdle. It was like right at that same time we switched from 4% to 5% beers.
Oh, yeah, because it was September when we made the change, right? I think so.
September or November.
5% was
November
1st.
November 1st.
And so it was, I'd just gotten comfortable with the brew house and got some things dialed in, and then we got to change it up right away. So the main one I brought one is our Cold Fusion Kolsch, which is our nice introductory easy.
Let's open that
easy
sucker.
Drinking beer.
Yeah, we're drinking my beer. We need to drink Clint's beer.
Oh my! I'm not drinking your beer, Chad.
So that was one that I brewed a ton of other beers at home, but once we finally decided that we were going to open a brewery, then it was the next probably 8 months or 9 months of just trying to dial in some 4% recipes that would work.
And so Kolsch, huh? God.
Yeah, Kolsch is, generally, I think even to the guidelines is 4 is maybe a little bit low, but... goes between 4.5 up to 5.5. So
yeah.
I felt like that would be.
So tell us about this one. Is this one a homebrew version that you've turned up to upscale a little bit?
Yeah. Just like as you open a, let's say, a professional scaled brewery, you get potentially better ingredients, or just buying things in bulk and being able to work with different suppliers to actually get what you really want instead of just taking whatever.
So
this one it's relatively simple. It's Pilsner malt from
Solstice. Nice. He was
and
just
then,
in here. He just poked his head in a second ago.
Can you come say hi, motherfucker?
Yeah. And then
gotcha.
And then a little bit of Munich 1 in there.
You're giving us all the trade secrets. Here you go.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Tettnang and Hallertau Midefrua in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's you know, relatively
sexy beer is what you're saying.
Straightforward, traditional.
Oh, look at that, brother. That is clear. Look, oh, that's sexy.
Very nice.
Some sexy head.
Are you using finings on this?
This one we're not, actually. So the I'm using the Dieter from Imperial Yeast on this one, and that it just flocks super, super well.
That's what we use.
Yeah.
FYI.
Yeah.
Imperial's awesome.
So it's good. I think for I think we have it on the can as 4.7. It comes in normally right between 4.5 and 4.7. I think it's got a decent amount of flavor and
no filter, no fining. Look at that.
Yeah, nice and awesome. Clear. So.
So we opened not too long before you guys, and as a home brewer, like that's what I was doing. Was brewing those 4% beers, like trying to get 4% like
to
good
taste
beer.
Not a ton like 4%
like water.
Yeah,
that was so hard. Like that's got to be, that was like one of the greatest things that I think we got as like small breweries, like mostly tap breweries, was that 5% changeover.
Yeah, which has made it's made a big difference. You know, especially now, like I think a lot of the modern, you know, everybody wants some kind of something hoppy and something, and it, I definitely noticed those first few months. Actually, our very first, I don't know how many different beers we've put out, probably 50 unique recipes. And the only one that I'm really like, the very first kind of session IPA that we put out was just, you know, a little bit too hoppy for the 4% level in it. Initially, when it was fresh, it was great. But after a couple of weeks, and it kind of settled in and just got a little bit, you know, kind of sharp. And but that was really, in my opinion, and like you guys know, I think a lot of the times the brewer knows, like a lot of people come up like, hey, man, this beer is awesome. And you're like,
thanks.
Yeah,
it's always room for improvement.
Yeah, always room for improvement.
But your good friends would be like, I'm picking up this.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
When I came up there, wasn't I up there opening week?
Pretty quickly after we opened.
That was cool. I came up, tried all the beers. I was like super impressed. And then it's funny, Drew, shout out to Good City. Drew was up there and he's like.
Yeah, I think he was that same day.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
So me and Drew were chatting. He's like, I'm opening a brewery down. Salt Lake, South Salt Lake. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Hate his brewery. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, no. Love those guys.
But, obviously.
But it's funny. Yeah, we both came up at the same time and had a good time at your brewery.
Have you been to Grid City there, Clint?
I might have stopped by for a beer on the way over here.
So. Oh, good. Good.
Nice.
Good guys.
I mean, going for Solstice Malt on the way.
Yeah, exactly. On the way. Right on the way. I was running a little bit ahead of schedule. So
no, Clint, I like this. This is nice. This is tasty. I feel like I want to drink this. I'm envisioning, Chad, hear me out, at the pool and crushing a couple of these.
Yeah, this is definitely our kind of easy drinking one. Right now we have on tap as well it's a pseudo pilsner. We call it the Norsk. So it's with a Kvike yeast.
Nice.
Oh, nice. And then a Belgian blonde as well. But this is probably the lightest, easy
gotcha,
drinking
yeah.
beer.
So question about it. I'm looking at the can.
Yeah.
You have obviously a geographical background to it.
So all of this, so they all have... So Cold Fusion is actually, it's a ski line. It's a couloir off the north side of Mount Timpanogos. So if you're coming down around Point of the Mountain and you look at Mount Timpanogos, there's like one shot that goes right from the top straight to the bottom.
Okay.
And that's called Cold Fusion.
So I never knew that.
That name comes
didn't
from.
Either. And we've lived here how long, Chad? Whole life.
There's a couple. Our Belgian triple is called the East Ridge. That's another ski line off of Mount Timpanogos.
Are all your names after
not all of them?
Ski?
Some of them have some skiing things that, or some relation to the Heber Valley or the area in general, but
James of Solstice Malt has arrived and say hi, James. Say hi.
James, come say hi real quick. Got surprises. We've been talking about you the past like 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You've seen all of us today.
Why wouldn't we?
And using local ingredients for local beer.
Aye. That's great. And you're mailing today for Chad.
Yep. Got another order. A special beer coming up.
Ooh.
I'm not telling what yet.
I don't even know. Matt's brewing it, so.
Hey, it's good seeing you, brother.
It's good to see you.
You're one of our heroes.
See ya.
Someday we'll put him in a hot tub and make a beer out of him.
Yes. That was a great little shout out. I like that.
Always covered in malt dust.
So, Clint, going back to the cans, I see you have, I like the hops in the background of your label. And before I get to this question, actually, I want to ask, it might be ironic, but why Heber Valley? Why did you come up with something cool? Why, I'm not saying that. Really
no.
Sorry.
I totally
a ski term or a.
That we actually did have a few other names, other ideas when we looked at to what names had already been taken there.
Yeah.
We actually ended up having to buy just HeberValleyBrewing.com off of somebody else that had
really?
You know, taken that domain name. And we had a few other.
Because
we'll say ski related or there were quite a few other names.
I mean, 6,000, 7,000 breweries.
Eventually we thought that since we were the first brewery in the valley that we should just
and see, that's what I'm getting at. Is I like that. I like when you guys call yourselves Heber Valley Brewing, because If I'm sending you someone to a brewery in Heber Valley,
yeah.
What are they going to look up?
Yeah.
Brewery,
and it's not just
Heber
a marketing
Valley,
thing.
Heber Valley Brewing pops up.
And it's a super unique place, too, that's, like, blown up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think our goals as a brewery aren't to, you know, like, challenge Anheuser-Busch or anything. But if we can kind of be that, you know, spot that everybody wants to stop at when they're coming through Heber, I think that was kind of a little bit.
Hell yeah, I love it. I love how you guys are taking, you know, control of it. I love how you guys are going full throttle and here you go in the front of the line, and I love it. Yeah. I love it a lot. And then explain the mountain range in the bottom.
So that is Mount Timpanogos. That's like every day when I drive into the brewery, especially early mornings. This is kind of like the little skyline. And then for the Kolsch, this is the only one I actually did a, you know.
You did it?
Yeah, I... The little education, formal education I have is in graphic design, so...
That worked out.
So I do a lot of those, nice. all the cans.
I need
and,
some
and
work
the
done there, Clint.
There's some cool stuff.
Yeah, explain the side.
Just like a little...
that's cool.
Formula. Originally we had... I really liked if you've had any beers imported from Europe or if you've had beers in Europe, they have like the circle with the... line through it with a pregnant woman, and the same with like a car drive, you know, like different ways of saying don't drink and drive, and like in addition to the government warning. I thought it's like a way cooler way to do it. So the original labels had that on there, but the federal government, the TTB, would not approve those because they said it was confusing. Even though, basically, it's reiterating the same thing. It just
in words. I like pictures. Everyone likes pictures more than words. Let's be real.
And then the overall, like the silver kind of, you know, it's just a topo relief of, I don't know.
I like
topo
it.
Topo lines
it's very
cool.
So.
And then you have a star over where Heber Valley is in Utah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I like the arrows.
Please recycle. Yeah, we take care of Utah.
Very cool.
So that is cool. I like the cans a lot, and I like the secret hops above the skyline. I like that.
It's awesome.
I need a sticker and or tattoo of this.
Do you see Timpanogos from up there? Do you guys live up there?
Yeah, I live on the south side of town, and like I said, in the mornings, especially in the winter, like early morning sun is like.
Oh,
it
probably hits
on
right
the
there.
Mountain
because we see you afterwards.
Yeah, it's
I only see like I-15 Timpanogos.
Yeah, Yeah, it's, and I'd say our side of Timpanogos has a little bit more character to it. There's more kind of big cliffed out areas
go spend a night.
I mean, in Heber, it's you know, honestly, like we were even thinking about, you know, Timpanogos or Timp Brewing or something like that. But
that'd be cool.
But every single business in Heber is named after Mount Timpanogos.
Ah,
I never realized that.
It kind of should be like when you come into the like. I don't know. It's a pretty awesome mountain. Like the view in the Heber Valley is pretty.
That's really
great.
Cool. I like that. So. Wow. Well done, Clint. So going off of that, no ski theme. I like you. You had one that I saw on your website that was a hef or a wheat, and it said something about like, give me your peach. Or what was that one called?
That was a sour. The peach better have my mango.
Peach better have my mango. Did you catch that? That's an awesome name. Tell me about that one. I was curious about that one.
That
it caught my eye.
Yeah. I would say a lot of the names either I come up with or my partner Greg, we just, you know, kind of talk a little bit. But any time that we are just stumped or like feeling lazy or whatever, then we try to hand it out to other people. And that one, I have to give credit. Greg, his youngest daughter, her name's Bree. She bartends for us a little bit.
That's cool.
And she just texts a bunch of her friends, and you know, they're all just post college age. And she said like, hey, we're putting out a peach mango sour. What should we call it? And a bunch of different names came back, but then as soon as that one came back, I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Because, Chad, you kind of do that a little bit. You give your brewers and staff kind of help with names.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to, like, tell people, no, that's a bad idea.
Oh, yeah.
But it is, like, when you hear something that, like, is a good one, you're like, oh, absolutely, we're putting that on the can. So.
Yeah, we shout out to our bartenders, like, hey, what do you guys want to call this beer? Like, Matt's pretty creative with what he comes up with.
Yeah,
his
he
beer
is.
Name too. But then a lot of stuff, it's like, we want to make sure it's not like locally used already. So mm-hmm. Yeah, do some searches. But
yeah.
Chad, what you got in your hand right there?
This is the single hop hazy with Sabro hops.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Yeah,
so that's about this one.
This is the fourth version. You know, with as many cool hops as there are out there these days. And then even a lot of hops that I've used a ton before, but never like just highlighted that one hop. So it's kind of like a learning thing for myself and for anybody that comes in and drink it. So this is the fourth we've done. I used some Enigma, Idaho 7, Hull Melon, which is a newer hop out of Germany. And then this is the latest one with Sabro. Like I said, I've used Sabro before, but.
Ooh, I get that from here.
But
pouring this thing, I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, it's
wow.
Really Cheers. Good.
I love that nose, Clink. Well done, brother. I get fennel, lots of fennel.
Sabro, out of the four single hops that we've done so far, I've definitely like Idaho 7 I think is one of my favorite hops. And then this Sabro has been like, I don't know. It's got like a interesting.
This is very interesting.
Like coconutty, vanilla-y.
I definitely get coconut vanilla out of this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it wants to be tropical and citrus at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
You just do a lot of dry hop with it or do some kettle hops too?
So this is all, so I guess back to our brew house, like, you know, it's a pretty basic setup, relatively small, pretty small heat exchanger, and that kind of limits what I can do in certain ways. But I think that's, it's just like, you know, you have to think a little bit differently.
Yeah.
But this one is, there's no kettle hops. And then I drop it down to 175 degrees and do a massive whirlpool addition. And then do either day one or day two, do a big bio transformation addition. And then once fermentation is pretty much settled out, do another dry hop addition. So trying to get as much out of the hop.
I like that.
And
it's all Sabro.
A lot of
Sabro.
Wow. You know what, brother? Awesome. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, this is. This
doesn't nice. Taste hazy enough for me, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all like how hazy's become a taste profile now. Mm-hmm. Appearance is 3 points. Just want you to know that.
Yeah, and really the this man. One and then our kind of normal, let's say, I mean, our just our hazy, is that's what we just call it, the Heber's hazy. Are the only beers that I do a lot any water adjustments to. The rest, our water profile is pretty decent. That was the same thing like when I was brewing at home before I was using reverse osmosis and adding stuff back in. And then once we decided that we were doing a brewery, I was like immediately just switched over and started using the water, got some samples back. And then I've tested quite a few times since we've opened. You know, I think maybe our water source in Heber is a little bit more consistent than it is in the Salt Lake Valley. I think in the valley, you're pulling from different places all the time.
Putting weird stuff in it.
So mm-hmm. I've had the water tested quite a few times in Heber, and the results have come back pretty consistently and pretty decent brewing water. It's like comparable, you know, if you look on like
Beersmith,
exactly. It's really close to Munich.
Oh, nice.
So I figured that would be not a terrible spot to
not
start
at all.
From. So
is this salt water runoff from the Uintas, right? Or?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure where the water. I mean, there's a few different sources or different drainages coming into Heber. But yeah, the water doesn't seem too bad. We just have a big carbon filter to try to pull out any chlorines and chloramines.
Oh, nice. Good.
And then, after that, it's definitely hard water. There's a lot of a lot of stuff in it. But,
fascinating.
It seems to be pretty good for brewing. So.
And I like this because you continue to hone in your skills, and I love that with what the equipment you have and what the resources you have.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have kind of a little untouched spot in Heber. Think about it. I mean, there's how many breweries in Salt Lake?
I don't know.
How many breweries on the other side of the mountain?
You can walk to them now, and it's great.
Yeah, it is great.
But we don't have as naturally resourced material as Heber would.
See how hopefully that lasts for a while.
Yeah,
The way that things are blowing up there, I mean,
it's
with the new ski resort and stuff that's being built, like it's crazy how fast the valley's growing. And
There you've got... let's see, like Park City nearby, you've got a Wasatch at the top of Maine.
Yeah.
Squatters and, doesn't really have a brewery.
Offset just started. I don't know if you guys have stopped in there yet.
Oh, that's
Patrick's
stuff, right?
They're near
Patrick
Kimble.
and Connor. I just stopped there on the way down and lent them a little labeler machine that I think they're going to try to do their first little canning run this next week. Connor makes awesome beer, and Patrick has a bunch of...
He still has my favorite Baltic Porter recipe of all time.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of good experience.
It's so good.
It's a small little spot, and I think they have a 3.5-ish barrel brew house.
That's about your size.
And kind of more like steering towards like a good local spot for people to stop in and have a drink and not really trying to take advantage of the Park City.
Cause you got parks. You're basically smack dab in the middle of Park City and Sundance, right?
For us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of.
It's a good little location though. Cause people from either.
For sure. And you know, overall our clientele and it's, you know, we have a mug club.
What's that?
We've got, let's see, 120 people in right now. Generally, we do everything in pints. We have a little bit of... we do some beers in smaller pours, or you can request a smaller pour. But the mug clubbers all have 21-ounce mugs with their name on them, and the logo on the other side. And we charge them... You know, Utah makes it... It makes it tough to do any kind of like meaningful mug club where like you're you know, your second beer or third beer is free or you can't discount in that kind of way.
Fucking Utah.
But they pay let's say it's an extra quarter for a 21-ounce pour instead of a 16-ounce pour.
Yeah.
We do annual kind of like a new t-shirt or or a mug. Or
how do we sign up for this?
Oh, that's good.
Well, it's tricky because we have a pretty good waiting list right now. We've kind of capped it at 100-120, mostly for size, you know, like capacity reasons. And I think it's good to kind of keep it a little bit
VIP,
a little bit exclusive. It was, but it we did originally, I think we had 70. And then that first year we were open, you know, because there were so many people that came in like the first week that we were open that were like, oh, this is awesome. I want to be in your mug club. And then they bought it and paid for it. And then like you haven't seen them since. But then, you know, you're open for that first year and there's the group of people that, every time that's they come spot. In, they're like, hey, why the hell am I not on in the mug club?
I got you.
So it was really cool to, it, you know.
I'm glad you got some good support at the beginning, though. That's,
yeah,
that's,
yeah, it's been
oh, yeah.
good.
We're having a brewery up there.
Oh, I've yeah, so awesome.
We've
game
got,
changer.
We've got a good local base. There's only a handful of places in Heber to go out and grab a beer. A lot of places, you know, restaurants and stuff.
Sure. Bowling alleys, I think.
Yeah, bowling alleys, those kind of places, but not a ton of places you just stop in and have a beer with a friend. So that's been good locally, and then, like you said, there's plenty going on up in Park City, and now all that stuff spilling down into Heber, and there's tons to do up in Sundance and in Midway, and
man, Clint, you got an opportunity, brother.
Yeah, it's
so you getting popular enough where we're gonna see a second location here soon.
We're trying to grow as, let's say, like controlled as possible. So right now, we kind of just pulled the trigger and like spending some money on our second like little upgrade. You know, finally getting a keg washer, which has been awesome.
Yes,
I had a little.
I heard about this manifold. Keg washer.
Yeah,
it came from is it Mountain West?
Yeah, Mountain West. And so we Hans Kombucha. Greg, my partner's daughters are good friends with Hannah, and so we stop in and get kombucha from her all the time. And the last month or two ago, he was in there and took a picture of this keg washer that they share a space with Mountain West, and it was the keg washer that I've been looking at for a while, and turns out they had some issues with their power. They, you know, three phase versus single phase and whatever. And then they needed to sell it. And so.
Yep. I mean, speaking of which, Hans Kombucha is one of our sponsors. So we appreciate Hannah and Kate for sponsoring this podcast.
Definitely.
All the time. But that's the thing about our community is we have great people in the, you know, brewing, distilling, fermentation process industry that are willing to help each other out.
Absolutely.
And I know like if you ever need something from me over there or Chad over here, I guarantee we'd help you in a nutshell. And I love that.
That's been super awesome, like getting into the – I do feel a little bit, you know, we're on the other side of the mountains, kind of off by ourselves a little bit. And so we miss out on a lot of like the little things that happen down in here in the valley. But overall, it's been like a very welcoming, you know, if you're missing a little – you need a bag of Pilsner or, you know,
yeah,
something.
A beer like stalls.
You can call us.
Yeah, exactly. Which has been, and I don't know, it's been hard trying not to, it's not there. It, like shipping in general lately has been a nightmare.
Shipping is the worst. It is.
We've had the last few orders this time last year, they'd show up in 2 or 3 days from Denver, and now they're taking 12 days, and then you find out they were sitting in the loading dock in Salt Lake for 7 of those days.
And then one of your bags is punctured. You're like, why? Yeah. Why is this happening?
It's so hard to communicate with those shipping companies.
And when, like when you're a brewery, I think we do about 40 or 45 barrels a month. So every one of those bags is like meaningful.
Gold.
You know?
I have a tank empty. I need a fucking brew right now.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's cool. Like, Clint's called me or Greg's come down like a couple times and they always bring beer. So,
as you should. I think so.
Yeah.
We've been pretty happy.
Well, guys, real quick, we're going to take a break real quick. I got a little bathroom break and a restocking break. But until we come back, all right, guys? Tastemasters is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. By using the code TASTEMASTERS, you will receive 10% off your ticket upon checking out. Food only. But guys, it's badass food. They have chicken sandwiches, Thai wings, poutine. They have brunch every Saturday, Sunday. The food is fantastic. One of the best in town. Again, use the code TASTEMASTERS upon checking out. 10% off your entire ticket, minus the alcohol. Guys, let's keep it local by supporting local. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you wanted to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms. Hey guys, it's David here. We are starting a Patreon, which is kind of like a tip jar, but digital. Basically what it does is it helps enhance the content of our podcast. If you like what you hear, want to help us out, go ahead and head to www.patreon.com/tastemasters and subscribe. Anything will help. Clint, you brought us something, another beer, right? It's another one you have.
Quite a few.
Oh.
We've got our the Wet Fly IPA. It's more of a West Coast.
I'm into that.
This one is got a pink guava sour.
Oh.
This is the Heber's Hazy, pretty similar
to
the
one. I've had this one. I've had that one. That's really great. Enjoyed that one.
And then I brought last year's.
What the fuck is this?
The Snake Creek Imperial Stout.
I have a bottle of that at home.
Yeah.
That I almost drank last night.
You waxed dipped them, huh? So you poor guy.
Yeah. Well, luckily we're dealing with a huge volume, so it's not too
bad. So tell us, I'm just curious about this Imperial Stout. Bourbon barrel aged.
Yeah.
10%. That's still Mountain Timpanogos. I see her.
Yeah, it's like, you know, with all of our logos and branding, it's kind of like deconstructed of the main logo, you know, just pull out like different elements and stuff.
So tell us about this one.
Say that again.
Tell us about this Snake Creek Imperial Stout, because you got my attention right now.
Yeah. I don't want to say it's straightforward. It's awesome, super delicious beer. I've got a friend that's been blending at High West for a few years, and occasionally they, you know, unload some barrels. So we've tried to take advantage of that whenever we can. I would like to do a lot more of these kind of beers, but our space is so small. We don't have a lot of area to, you know, let barrels sit around for months at a time. So hopefully that's in the future. But anyway, this beer is also kind of, we're maxing out our mash tun. It's all our hot liquor tank, boil kettle, and mash tun are all the same size. And so for this one, I do a reoccurring mash. So mash in with half the grain bill, pump it off to the boil kettle, get that back up to the right mash in temperature, and then use the wort to go back in. So then the initial, like, first runnings of that, I think this last time were 33 bricks or something like that. Whoa. Like, you know, pretty thick syrup.
Yeah. Thick boy.
And then, yeah, put it in barrels for a few months. It'd be nice to leave it in longer, but, you know, I think
it's real estate.
Yeah, real estate, and there's kind of like just the, you know, diminishing returns. It's like those first two or three months you get a ton of character out of the barrels, and then after that it's like little subtleties, which, you know, eventually it'd be awesome to be able to set 15 or 20 or 100 or 10,000 barrels of it aside, and not 10,000, that's crazy, and let it sit for a year or two, but for now, we're doing it just long enough to kind of pull some good character out of the whiskey barrels.
And what whiskey barrels are you using?
The bourbon. It's
just bourbon.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
High West bourbon.
That's
the American barrels. Prairie bourbon.
I think.
Is that what it is?
So
pretty sure. And you're right there. You're the closest person to.
So with that little system, are you doing like a no sparge beer?
No, I mean we're sparging. Yeah, it's definitely hard. Any beer over, with my system right now, let's say comfortably I can do 7% ABV. Anything above that, is a little bit, I either have to, you know, do like a super, super slow transfer or cut it off a little bit short. Or, you know, like for our triple is 8%, I think. And, but you're, you know, I add a little bit of candy sugar afterward anyway. And same for our double IPA, adding a little bit of dextrose in there too.
Nice.
So that's a little bit of a limitation.
Right.
But,
I mean, that's the room to grow though.
Right.
That's all it means.
And like I said, so there's one beer that I don't have here that I actually, you know, personally, I like to make, you know, drinkable beers.
Right.
not going overboard on flavors or whatever, but also not, you know, I don't want to go like right down the middle, but having beers that you want to drink, you know, more just than crush. One pint of.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then mostly because of our limitations, we have our, it's called the Stellar Stream IPA that is kind of a mix of like new school kind of brewing and a little bit like it's kind of a West Coast IPA, but because of my limitations at the brew house, I use some CO2 hop extract for bittering. And then I do the same thing like you would with a hazy IPA and drop the temperature down in the whirlpool and then add a bunch of Galaxy and Equinaut hops.
Oh, gotcha. Nice.
And so it's like a low, medium bitterness pale ale, but with you know, a ton of...
A lot of that big aroma.
Yeah.
Snap to it. I love a little bit of bitterness.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing I kind of miss about the hazies nowadays.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're good, but I miss that little, like...
Yeah.
I love tap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this one, let's see, you're going to open the...
I'm into this wet fly IPA.
So tell us about this wet fly real quick, in detail.
A little bit more traditional, but still, I don't think there's any crystal malts in there. It's using a little bit of Munich Type 2 to get some flavor and some sugars in there.
Your glass over
and
there.
Your clarity in all your beers, Jesus Christ!
This one, I do use Biofine in this one.
Nice.
Which is I've been having like. Great luck with it. And kind of figured out the process a little bit. This one has Centennial, let's see.
Ooh.
Centennial Amarillo and a little bit of Citra.
Nice.
So enough of like kind of pininess, but then a little bit of citrus notes to kind of bump it up a little.
Love that color on there.
Definitely. I know, right?
Got that West Coast.
Yeah.
Color nice to it.
What's a West Coast IPA? Oh man! Oh my God! This
might not just clear.
This is a camping beer.
Yeah,
that is absolutely. A 1,000% camping beer.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Well done, Clint.
I love the Munich on that.
Yeah, it's good. Gives it like a little bit of fullness and without being
It's
like a touch of toasty on there.
Yeah.
I like definitely. That a lot. I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, get some malt backbone to it. Little bitterness to it.
This is balanced, Clint.
This is great.
This is well balanced, and I like that. I say a lot because Grid City has my favorite saying: taste, balance, finish. And that's their motto.
Yeah.
And if a beer comes out with those three,
yeah. What else can you do?
This is it, brother. I like it.
That's great.
Wow, well done.
Yeah, and you know, again, back to like it's not overly hoppy, but at 5%, it's kind of, you know, trying to. Find the limit, I guess, a little bit without being too like you know, if you over hop like a low ABV beer, they can like have that kind of soapy, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, this is great.
No,
it's kind of nostalgic, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Like a lot of breweries have kind of forgotten the style, a lot of newer breweries are,
yeah,
thank God you're making one, dude.
They're trying to make West Coast IPAs, and it's like, well, you still got these like fruity tropical things, and it's kind of soft, like, it's got to have some depth to it.
Yeah,
like
and I, you know, I think it's good to be like modern and doing what's cool. But
sure.
I mean, I used to like 10 this or 15 like years ago, beers were also pretty good. So
back in the
these,
day,
now can't
you
get
can't
these anymore. No,
no,
like
not a lot of people are doing.
I love this
West Coast right now.
Yeah,
Clint. Well, Man, you're blowing me away. That's awesome. Thank you, dude. That's well done, man.
Yeah.
God, what's it make it? What's it like to see someone when you release a beer like this, and then you see someone at the end of your bar, just grab it and do what we did? It's like, fuck, dude, this is good.
It's
and
awesome.
Not knowing
and,
the other brewer.
It is. You know, dealing with tastes, it's hard. Like most of the people that come into a brewery probably don't know 100% what they're talking about or what kind of beers they even like. You know, they come up and ask you to explain, but you know, they know when they drink something like, oh, that tastes good and whatever. But it is cool. There are a handful of people, in the Valley that have been around and had good beers. And when those people say like, hey, like you nailed this one. And at least you know you're not totally screwing up.
Clint, you're doing good things, dude. You're doing good things. I love it.
Yeah, I've always been impressed by Clint's beer. Anytime some shows up and I walk in here, I'm pretty stoked. So.
Was that the Slipstream? What's this one, the orange one?
This is just our hazy. The one that I was talking up so much earlier is the Stellar Stream.
Gotcha, Stellar Stream.
We don't have
it.
But
this hazy
generally
is the one that
with that one,
me.
It's. I kind of go back and forth with the Wet Fly IPA and the Stellar Stream.
I think
we have eight
Wet Fly's
taps.
Good, dude.
We have
That's
eight
great.
Taps.
How many taps?
So,
eight taps?
Yeah, eight taps. And then we do some High Point beers here and there. And part of our little expansion that I didn't finish on that. We got a keg washer. We got a new 10 barrel fermenter that should be showing up any day now, which is good. It's awesome, but I'm going to have to triple batch into it. So that'll be some long days.
It'll be a couple long days.
And then a little single head canning line from American Canning so that we can, that 10 barrel fermenter will be dedicated more or less just to High Point beers. Yeah. So we can keep our to go cooler packed.
And
full.
You guys have a PA license, right? You guys can sell out. Okay, yep. And then are you guys bringing anything in the DABC?
No. Right now,
are
just
we looking
volume
at going
wise,
to DABC?
Not for a while. Okay. I mean, we just extended our lease, and so we'll be in our space for a while. And yeah, it's, you know, let's say demand or sales kind of go up a little bit. So we haven't really been able to sell outside of our space yet.
Gotcha. But so, give me a 5-year goal. What's the goal for even 2022?
So
what's,
I think, next, let's say over COVID, which is, this has been kind of a weird overlap the last few months. During COVID, we were doing only to-go beer. And there were so many people that just got used to that, like stopping in on their way home and grabbing a 4-pack or whatever. And then once we opened the doors and people started coming in again, then we had to kind of curb that. Like we, you know, had to slow down on how much we were canning because we were running out on the stuff on the taps. And having beer on tap and being able to sit in the tap room is our first priority. And then now at least we should, you know, hopefully be able to, with a 10-barrel fermenter, add an additional 15 to 20 barrels a month. And that'll be dedicated more just to the canning or the to-go side. So hopefully those people that have been bummed, you know, because it sucks when you walk in, you're psyched to grab some beers and you look in the to-go cooler and it's empty.
Gonzo.
And so I totally understand where, you know, there's been some people that are like bummed, you know.
Sure.
Or pissed, like, or whatever you want to say about it.
Like, we're small, like,
yeah, you're like working your ass off, and
we can't keep up in here, but like, yeah. You guys are three and a half barrel,
and I think right now our fermentation space is similar to you. We have two 7-barrels and three and a half barrel fermenters, so we're doing about 40 to 45 barrels a month. So anyway, adding a 10-barrel fermenter will be huge.
Be nice.
That'll help and, you gigantically.
So anyway, we want to do that, get established, and hopefully after a few months of canning beer, we'll have a little bit of inventory so that we can at least get some of the beers out to like the local restaurants and stuff, a few of them. And then you know, I think our plan a little bit is in 3 years, we extended our lease for 3 years, and maybe we're going to keep that spot forever and maybe just try to find a little warehouse space to build, you know. Like I said, we don't ever want to take over the world, but with this new ski area coming in just up the valley.
Oh man.
You know, if we could get a little tap room right at the base of the resort and our little spot here.
Let's make it happen.
And then a little production area where we could supply beer to the Heber Valley.
Yes.
Then I think that'd be a pretty cool way to go.
Oh man, this is really cool.
Are you guys considered a nano brewery at that size?
I guess. I don't know what it. Yeah. What is the definition?
I'm not sure.
Like the exact.
It's like you got nano, micro.
I don't know. I don't even think they do micro anymore. I think it's just all craft beer now. It's fine.
Yeah.
Just duh.
But it has been great. I mean, like, you know, that was hard when we were initially planning and getting ready to open up. Like, we didn't know what the demand was going to be. We didn't want to. But it's like you hear the same thing all the time. Like, man, I wish we would have, got a bigger brew house. But I guess it's the same for us for sure.
Oh,
like
yeah.
we could get rid of a lot, you know, especially when it comes to like wholesaling or whatever to a restaurant or something. Like, I think there's a lot of the little restaurants in town that we talk to pretty often, or one of their employees stops in and is like, hey, when can we start taking
That's
kegs
cool.
or whatever?
Good support right there.
It'll be cool when that happens, but at least this short-term future, we need to make sure that we can
sure
stay alive. So
Clint, on that note, like what's a competition? Have you gone to competitions yet? Heber Valley's gone into anything?
Not really.
We looking at it in the future?
Yeah, I think I have a few beers that I'd like to put into competitions. I just wanted to be open long enough and kind of get a good handle on exactly what I, you know, what my brew house and my
gotcha.
My setup would do before I spend too much time. And actually, a big part of it is being able to can properly and make sure that the product, you know, I think we do a good job of canning beers. I've definitely, you know, we've had a few come back where like a seam isn't
right.
done properly.
You'll have those
whatever.
Minor hiccups though.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So hopefully in the next year, getting like an actual canning line and changing a few of those factors, will help me personally be more confident to
I like that
send the beers out to actually like be judged
right
let's say.
Gotcha. So Chad has opened the pink guava.
Yeah, this one the original pink guava sour was like just with pink guava, which was it was good, but I thought it was like a little bit one note, and so I started adding a little bit of this one has a little bit of blueberry and some
Ooh.
Blackberry in there.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think also makes the color.
That's a great color, brother.
Really good color.
I like that.
That's yeah.
It's like a pinkish Amazing. With a hint of blue.
Yeah.
And do you pitch a lacto in the kettle? Or?
Yes. Yeah. We do the sour pitch from, is it Lulliman?
Oh, is that the... There's a Philly sour.
I was actually going to ask you guys about that. I just ordered some of that today. You know, the bummer with for me doing kettle sours is I have to keep them at 3.5 barrels,
uh-huh.
and then they sell out super fast. And I've done I did a barrel aged sour.
Oh,
it was
wow.
kind of a mixed thing. It was kettle sour, and then put them into some Hungarian red wine barrels.
Oh, oh shit. Nice.
And then over a few months just kept adding some more fruit to them to kind of keep the fermentation going. That one turned out awesome, and I think, you know, that sold out faster than any beer
we've
done.
That sounds amazing.
But, you know, if I'm going to be triple batching, I can't be doing kettle sours. So it is cool that now the same company is putting out this Philly sour yeast. So I'm going to start messing around with that a little bit so that hopefully I can come up with something good that'll work in a bigger, or actually work in a fermenter, which is crazy. That's it's pretty cool that they've figured that out. But
I was hanging out at, I was in PA a few months ago, and I was hanging out at Artillery Brewing in Westchester, and they had their brewer helped develop this yeast strain, the Philly Sour. So I was trying their sour. I'm like, what do you guys do?
This one is just the sour pitch. So this is just a lacto in the in the boil kettle. Let the pH get down to 3.2-ish. And then I've been using the Kvaking strain from Imperial Yeast and trying to ferment it as hot as I can.
That's great.
Like getting it up to to 97-ish.
I was like 94.
Yeah.
97.
97. And then not turning the jackets on, just kind of letting it go.
Free rise. Woo!
That's really good. I will say I was impressed by the Philly sour beer I had.
Really? Like I said, I just ordered some of that yeast to try to experiment with a little bit, but hoping.
This is great.
This is tasty as hell.
I mean, you smell the guava. You do get a hint of that blackberry.
Yeah, a little blackberry blue. Like, it just gives it like a little bit more kind of heaviness.
Love tap.
Yeah.
Depth.
A little depth.
I like that depth.
Yeah.
This is, I'm not off put by it. Like, I like drinking this. I keep going back
to it. I loved drinking before sours were like kind of widely known in the US. Like,
yeah.
You'd go to the Bayou and sometimes I would have a sour, or, you know, you go to Colorado, you can get some sours, but drink all these Belgian sours and they're not really that sour. They just have a nice little funk, they have little tartness.
And, you know, and if I'm being 100% honest, the first sour beer that I made was at our brewery.
Oh, wow.
So just kind of had to figure it out. And I like sipping on sour beers now, but it wasn't really a good Creek or something, like a Belgian. But I made these beers and then they would sell out really quick, and every other person that comes in was like, "Woo, yeah, where the hell's your pink sour? Why isn't it on?"
We did another one there. Sours.
What's that?
Better blowing people's minds up there with sours. Probably never.
That's a whole another conversation. But like Heber in general, you know, we don't have any other breweries around, so I'm trying to do a little bit of everything to make sure that
you're putting out like world class beer and like a wide variety of styles in this little town in Utah. Pretty rad.
Heber.
I love the carb on here.
That's what I'm saying. Like this is drinkable. Like the like American style sours you drink are just like, holy shit. Like I'm fucking crying.
Yeah, and
on the
front side, I'm just trying to make as clean of a base beer and trying to get that lactic acid as, you know,
I mean, it's super
as clean as
this
possible.
But I feel like I'm not drinking, because usually it's, you know, kettle sours and the lactic acid, I feel like I'm just drinking stomach acid.
Kind of farty smell. And I don't know. Maybe I've just been super lucky. And I do let it sit in the boil kettle a little longer. But because I feel like this, at least, you know, I guess that's just one thing with using one thing over and over again. You kind of learn how it works, but I haven't been able to get it below 3.2, but I feel like the longer I've left it in the boil kettle that it does kind of clean up a little bit. And you're like, you lose that kind of like sweaty foot or body odor, like kind of that funk from the
sweaty foot's a good one.
Like that. Like, I know exactly
like,
what you're
it's like, yeah, the first day when you come back into the brewery and you're like, what the hell is that smell? And you're like, I'm making a sour right now.
Oh yeah. Funking the place up.
Right. But yeah, it seems to have cleaned up pretty well. And that's why I'm like super curious how the experiments with that new Philly sour are going to go. And if, you know, I've read and seen that they say that it puts off a little bit of kind of apple flavors, or I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
I'm curious to see where that goes, where you go with that. It'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any big events or parties that happens at Heber Valley? Like anniversary party? We're looking at, we're celebrating a ski event. Like what's a big party we're looking at Heber Valley?
Well, yes, we were planning, we're doing an Oktoberfest event. We did the first year we were open, we did a pretty big one, which was great. And then last year it wasn't really possible with
best COVID, year of our
all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the God, shit.
And
like
then this year, I've got a Marzen brewing right now, but it's a little bit delayed because of the birth of my child. So we originally next weekend was supposed to be our Oktoberfest. But we had to push it back a week.
It's okay. So everyone else at Oktoberfest last weekend.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, the first time we did it, you know, traditionally when you're like end of September and everybody that came in was like, well, why the hell are you doing Oktoberfest in September?
I don't understand.
Like, that's fine. Yeah.
And then Marzen. So when's the release for this Marzen?
It'll be that weekend. So is it the October 8th and 9th, I think.
Hey, Chad, what are you doing October 8th or
9th? We're having our own little Oktoberfest because we're also a small brewery that
is doing the same thing. Yeah. That's a hard thing, you know, like, so yeah, for us, really the first year, you know, it was me and Greg and maybe we would get a little bit of help serving. So we would be in brewing beer, knock out, clean up, and then, you know, put a name tag on and go out and sell beer until
wee hours of the night.
So now at least we're at a point, it's not like we're a big operation, but we have four bartenders and then me and Greg, and I've at least been able to switch over. I'm the only one that does all the brewing and cleaning fermenters and kegs and all that kind of stuff. So which is at least a full-time job. So now I'm at least able to kind of focus on that and just come in super early in the morning and try to get everything done before the brewery's open. So
yeah,
it's been good.
So Clay, I have a couple more questions for you. What's something that you want Heber Valley to be remembered for?
Oh man.
Just knock you on your ass real quick.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I think, I really should have just brought Greg up here. I think both of us are we've got a lot of like world experience and a lot of cool times, like doing things around Olympic skiing. Mm. But at the end of the day, none of the Olympic skiing actually is it matters, but it's a lot more about the experiences you're having and the time you're spending with friends. And that was kind of one of the biggest ideas behind us building the breweries, having that spot in Heber where you're done skiing, you're done mountain biking, you're done doing whatever, and you come in and hang out and people that are in there, you can have a drink and relax and I've been super psyched overall with the reception for the last couple of years, and with there's a handful of our Mug Club members that are I don't think they have any kind of drinking issues, but it is part of their routine. You know, they stop in after a day of work, they have a drink with the two or three guys that they see there every day, and then they go home to their families. And so like to, you know, provide awesome beer and that kind of community gathering area spot is a super cool thing. So
that's hella cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Well, coming from, I mean, seeing what's happening at, you know, Utah County, Salt Lake County, what's a brewery or a brewer you look up to?
There's a ton of them. I think TF is a pretty maybe obvious one. They're doing great things. Kevin's an awesome guy. Level Crossing and Chris and there's a lot of cool stuff going on. It is nice that there are, that Heber hasn't, or, sorry, Utah hasn't blown up to the point where you're like doing a ton of nationwide distribution. So it's like every little brewery is still has like kind of a little bit of a local feel, and they're kind of all doing their own little things, which I think is pretty cool. I think the Utah scene is growing up pretty quickly, and yeah, it's awesome to see, and I guess now be a little bit of a part of it. So
you are a part of it, brother.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
because you're on the weird. Other side of the mountains, that's what you know. That's why I kind of forced your hand to come here tonight. Is I want you to know that you are a part of our community.
Yeah,
you are doing great things, and I better see your ass more and face. I better see it more. I better see you come around more. I better see awesome, continue to do awesome beers. But Chad and I are itching to try this Imperial.
Yeah, let's do it.
Like itching because one of our favorite styles.
Yeah,
I pulled it out of my fridge last night and started looking at my.
So this one we bottled last. We release it right around Christmas. This is the second edition that came out last year.
Oh my god, I gotta take a picture of this, Chad, before you open
this.
Oh
yeah. So who's got a bottle of it?
I do have my keys somewhere. Hold on, I'm gonna take a picture. I mean, I gotta get a
three
picture.
Brewers here. One of us has to have one.
We'll figure out a way to open it. That's sure. True.
I tried opening a bottle of wine with my keys in Hawaii. Cut myself. Don't recommend it.
I've done that before for sure.
Cut yourself and then just drink a bunch of cork.
Yeah. So, oh shit. So how I cut myself was I put the key in the cork about a 45 degree angle as hard as I could, and I twisted it. And what happened is one of the teeth of the key from the keys shattered the top of the glass, and it just ricocheted, and it just cut myself.
Oh shit!
I'm like, what happened here? But it was a decent wine.
Do we have are these freshies?
Yeah, those two right there.
Sweet. These two, and which one had the Kolsch? Oh,
look at that foam. So one thing I will mention about Utah breweries is there's a fucking badass community here. You know, everybody really supports each other, and
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Utah just hasn't really had beer. I mean, we've had beer, but not a lot of it.
Yeah.
And it's always been good beer,
mm-hmm.
but just not a wide selection. And now you can walk brewery to brewery and
that's, you know, I grew up in Colorado, and
where all the beer is.
And as much as people like make problems about brewing, I mean, there's definitely problems. Like, it'd be sweet if I could have the Grunge IPA at 6.5 ABV like on tap instead and cracking it and turning it around and giving it to somebody. Yeah. That'd be fantastic. But at the end of the day, you know, like, I remember I used to go back over, like, had a bunch of friends that went to school at CU. And they were like, oh my God, I don't know how you even live in Utah, like, with all those rules. And they're chugging Coors Light. And you're like, you know, you're drinking the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think I could get drunk if I was in Utah. You're like, I'm pretty sure you could figure it out.
Oh yeah. Especially a little elevation change up here. Well, maybe not from Colorado, but there's definitely an awesome community out here where we want this beer. We want more beer. We want more breweries. And from what I've heard from other brewers coming in here from out of town, and other people that have worked in the industry in other states and cities, they're like, Utah's got the best brewing community.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think it's small enough, but there's also there's a pretty good amount of. Experience, you know, there's a few breweries that have been around since the 80s, uh-huh. you know, and then a lot of those guys that have worked for those older breweries. And I think there's like a good evolution and a lot of new ideas. And, you know, I just went before my baby was born a couple weeks ago, we went and did a road trip up in Oregon and up to Seattle and back down around, and drank a bunch of awesome beers, but there wasn't anything that I was really like, this is so much better than something that I could get in Utah, you know? which is cool. Like every person that comes in, like, oh, you know, I just went up to Portland or whatever, and I had the best beers I've ever. And, like, I guess
it used to kind of be that way.
Maybe there's a lot of the kind of hype and just the overall idea of that that's not really the case. And then the other thing is there's good and there's mediocre and bad breweries kind of everywhere you go.
All over the place.
And that's the thing. You're making good beer on the other side of the mountain, right? Right.
The other side.
Right, yeah. Which I feel that's
the unofficial name.
Because I was telling my wife and I had tried so hard to come to your place this entire summer. And that's when I texted Chad. I'm like, all right, give me Clint's number. I can't do it. Like, I'm making him. I'm figuring this out. Because I've wanted to showcase what you're doing. You are a part of the community, and that cool aspect of Utah beer, you're making it, brother. Yeah. And this is cool. Chad, this stout?
For 10%, this is dangerous.
It's pretty. I'd say it's drinkable.
This is a morning beer. Yeah. This is coffee at the very end, and I like that.
It's a nice, like, almond, like, maybe amaretto?
I was going to say amaretto.
Amaretto, yeah. I think that's a good way to say it.
This is really fucking good.
I don't think this is 10%. I think you're a liar.
This is fucking great.
If it's not 10%, it might be a little more. Don't tell.
That's great. That's definitely easy drinking.
Yeah, I mean, what was the last big one that I had from, I think, brewery? You know, it was like I know a lot of the new, really new style, especially like Imperial Stouts are like, they're like so
sticky.
Like high gravity, you know, or like finishing gravities of, you know, 1040 or something.
Uh-huh.
And
they're like our usual starting gravity.
Yeah, exactly.
We were doing 10% and it's
good. For a couple ounce taster. You're like, wow, that's great flavor and whatever. But then you're like,
the drinkability.
Shit, we have a 22 ounce bomber of this thing to finish. Uh-huh. Like
I mean, it still has bodies.
This is crushable.
But it doesn't have that boozy aspect to it.
No, I was expecting the boozy aspect of it.
Yeah.
I was.
And a lot of beers this high ABV have those fusel alcohols, you know?
Right.
Like hotness to it. This doesn't have that. That's great.
Clint, are you pleased with this one?
Yes. I would say, I mean, for what it is, for the type of beer it is, it's one of my favorites probably.
This is awesome.
I think it's
pretty good. And the dark brown bottle with the
white labeling on
the
it.
The dark nitro, or excuse me, the Imperial Stout with the white label and the white wax. Well done. It's sexy.
So the first year we did a gold wax. So that's, you know, we don't have any year or anything on the bottle itself, so it's just going to be whatever color the wax is.
Gotcha.
So this is a 2020 bottle.
Yep.
Okay. I have the same bottle at my house, and I was looking for a
hold
day
on. Now
last
you don't
night.
Have to open it for a little bit longer.
Cool.
Is there any 2020s left?
Thanks for bringing this one.
Yeah. I mean, that's I love.
Yeah,
I
the
like
first
this.
One was gold, white, and then we'll just figure, you know, whatever. Do another color this year and.
It'll
be like kind of only the people that know.
I like that as well.
So I did want to mention one thing about the size of your brewery. That's fun for us, being as small as we are as well. It's like you're not really distributing. You don't have people asking you like, I'm sure, you know, we do have people asking like, we want this beer back. And that's like, but the fun thing is your beer is always fresh.
Yeah.
And you can make whatever the fuck you want to make.
Yeah, you don't have to commit to anything crazy.
Yeah.
Or if you do, yeah, yeah. That's been the best thing. And that's kind of, like, I'm trying as much as I can to tweak things and take advantage of that with the idea. I mean, in 5 years, if we are brewing even, you know, like 30 gallon or 30 barrel batches, that at least we know exactly what we want to do at that point. So yeah, it's fun having a small little brewery and see what works and see what doesn't. And,
Damn, Clint, you're awesome, man. I appreciate you taking the time out of your Monday nights to come down and hang out with Chad and I.
I could be home changing diapers right now.
You could, so. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a good time. I've been there.
you should go back and do that. No, but what's something that Chad and I can do, whether it's just as friends or in the brewing aspect, to help you and help Heber Valley? What can we do?
I don't know. I think... I mean, sending people up and over the mountains is great. I think for Greg and I both, you know, we've worked our asses off these first couple of years to kind of get things going and get some traction. And you know, I'm still, my time is going to be taken up with brewing or whatever. But now I think we can spend more time, you know, I can take a Monday off and go and do these kind of things, do more beer festivals, do more, you know, try to get a little bit more out in the community. But that's, you know, I think that's more on, I guess, on us to try to take those things to the next step and be more a part of the Utah beer community. So,
'cause you are a part of it. I keep saying,
I know we are, but we've been, you know, it's hard to see outside of your little bubble and right. Just the day to day. I mean, it's crazy as like a business owner and brewer and whatever, just like how many balls you're trying to keep up in the air and a new dad.
Yeah.
And,
damn.
The amount of free time goes away pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But now we've got some awesome staff.
Cool.
And, so hopefully in the next year or two we can start venturing out and being a bigger part.
Hell yeah.
Or contributing more, let's say, to the Utah.
And I hope it happens, scene. Brother. And don't be afraid to ask Chad and I what we can do to help. And I mean, when anytime I'm going through Heber, I promise you I'm stopping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Promise. What's for the people who are listening, do you have some swag? Do you have what's your hours look like?
Hours are during the week, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 9.
Okay.
Mostly that's because like the early half of the day I'm in brewing beer. Then Fridays, Saturdays are noon to 10.
Okay, cool.
And Sundays are noon to 6 p.m.
Gotcha.
Which generally right now ends up being right between the two football games. So,
yeah, so 8-ish.
At least you can, as soon as one game ends, you can
get out of here,
head home and watch the Sunday night game.
But. Gotcha. Well, brother, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your, you know, busy schedule to come down here. Congratulations on the baby, brother. Thank you so much. And congratulations on making awesome beer. Thank you for sharing it with us. And
appreciate it.
I mean, I hope everyone needs to go to Heber Valley. It's that simple. I mean, you're making good shit, dude.
Got to do the thing.
And Chad and I will be coming up, and once we do, we expect a tour.
It's going to take a long time. It's a huge, huge space. So.
It's pretty rad.
And do you have a bidet in your bathroom?
We have a hose that we can pull around.
That works. Then we'll see you up there. Right. Chad, do you have anything for us today?
No, man. This is great beer. Like I said, Clint's always impressed me with this beer. It's got a great little space up there. So,
Clint, I'm excited to see where this friendship goes between the three of us.
I'm excited for another ski resort up there. And, like, we got a lot of tourism in here. And it's like people come in with their fucking ski boots on. You're like,
oh, yeah, get ready. I'll spend time. I'll spend time for you.
It's like, well, if you're going to go up to Ski Park City Canyons, whatever, or whatever the new resort's going to be, like,
yeah, go wear your ski boots into that place.
Yeah, go check out Heber Valley. Okay. Wear the ski boots. It's fine.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, boys, for doing this tonight. And, Clint, again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. Great job, dude. And I cannot wait to see you win an award. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right. Until the next beverage, my friends.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.